Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Conversations of the Strange. I am Don Smith, your host, and I am on the phone with a really nice guy, a wonderful writer and a wonderful creator, Will Holland. Will, he is the Will, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Not a problem at all. I'm glad to have the opportunity to be on Conversations about the Strange. It's just really awesome opportunity. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, no, my pleasure. And full disclosure, we had to start this over again, Will. So we had to start this over again. But, Will, I do want to ask, how does it feel to be told twice in one night that you are a nice guy and a wonderful artist and a wonderful writer?
I appreciate that because it means that we've had an interaction that's been a positive interaction. So that's always a good thing.
Gotcha. And right now, one of the interesting things is that when you look at your Amazon page, if you go to amazon.com/William-Holland, H-O-L-L-A-N-D, you can see pretty much your complete book series that you have, the Pencil Ninja stuff, and an interesting book called Your Life Matters. And also at the same time, the report on John Henry. Between you and me, John Henry was always my favorite of the tall tales that you would hear, like you know, like your Pecos Bill stories and your Paul Bunyan. And John Henry was always mine. It was like you got one guy with two hammers versus a machine, and he ends up killing himself to do it, but he won.
Right.
So it's interesting that you see this. Now, also on your page, it lists all these interesting places that you've lived. You've lived in Memphis, you've lived in Texas, you lived in Louisiana, and you live in Kentucky. Can I ask, where do you currently live?
I currently live in Campbellsville, Kentucky. I was in Texas from 2004 to 2017 after Hurricane Harvey hit. I needed a little bit of a rebuild phase, so I came back to a town that's a little bit slower that I can get in and get some stuff rebuilt after the hurricane hit, because whether it hit us directly, it didn't hit me directly, but what it did do was it very much affected my job and directly, it indirectly hit me. And so I had to kind of do some rebuilding after that.
Oh, that stinks.
Well, let me ask. It's part of process, and I'm actually glad for it because it's got me in a place I'm slowly working on some things and get some things going. It takes a bit, but process is the spice of life.
Right, right. But also at the same time, what I'm seeing is that it gives you a chance to refocus. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah. Now, do you use any of this for your stories, like the day-to-day things? Like, do you use that as, like, a chance to go, you know what, I'm kind of having a rough bit. I bet you, hey, you know what, maybe we can put some of this in the story and I can get some of this out of it. Or do you, like, you know, like people say creating and writing is almost cheap therapy because it allows you to get stuff out.
It can be. My first book that I wrote called Hero Needed, I wrote that back in 2016. And I remember really just thinking of, I was in a weird time. I was substitute teaching a lot. And so I saw a lot of kids getting picked on. And it really reminded me of when I was a child. You know, I was always, as I described myself, the fat roly-poly kid. Mm. You know, I had a lot of personality, but I couldn't run very fast. I could kick the kickball really hard, but I didn't need to worry about running quickly because I could just kick the ball hard. And so, you know, you had all the different things going on. I mean, I've had everything from, you know, guns pulled on me at different points at school, in some cases, even out in the world walking home from school, to knives being pulled on me and stuff like that, and different things just because I was different. I was in a situation growing up where I was taught how to, and this is kind of sound really weird, I was taught how to enunciate, and you wouldn't think that would be something that would penalize you, but for me, it was something to penalize me because a lot of people that look like me would be like, well, you talk differently than we do. But then on the other side of the spectrum, it was, you know, especially in my hometown in Tennessee, I was looked at as, well, he's never going to quite be like us. Mm. You know, he's never going to quite be accepted like us because he looks like he looks. And so there was this kind of counterbalance where I was just stuck in the middle, you know, just trying to go to school, do my thing and everything. And so a lot of the stuff that comes out of the books that I've written has come from a lot, but I was also to try to speak to kids who are going through similar situations like myself.
Right. Now, one of the things that you wrote was Your Life Matters. Was that just a straightforward, like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to flat out tell you, we need you. You're needed here. God put you on this planet for a purpose, and you need to be here. Is that basically what that's about?
That's what a lot of it is about because, this is back when I wrote this book. I wrote this in 2017. Of course, you had the Black Lives Matter movement going. You had the Blue Lives Matter movement going. You had all these different your life matter, my life matters. Well, why does my life matter? Because I identify with this or I identify with that. And it's just, I really wanted to write a book that said, I don't care who you are. I don't care what side of the fence you're on, where you grow up, what you've been told, what you've heard in fights with parents in some cases, what you may have heard from other teachers who may not believe in you, different things like that. You matter. You have a purpose that God designed you for. And so, my encouragement to you in this is that you would live that life and find out that purpose for your
Gotcha.
life.
Gotcha. Now, with some of the things that you faced, it sounds like that you were dealing with a community that is just kind of like, this is the standard of how we live. And your family said, no, we want a different standard. And because it was a quote unquote different standard, that puts you automatically in with, it seems like it puts you in with another culture. It was almost as if you went from being like inner city Harlem, New York, and you said, I identify with ancient samurai Japanese, and you're walking around with kimonos and Darth Vader looking masks and other swords, and that got you a lot of unusual looks. But in reality, it was this is the way that I'm raised, and this is the proper way to do things. This isn't a race thing, this isn't a culture thing, this is a right way to do things. And because of that, there was a lot of ostracization, if I said that correctly, where basically you were kind of your community kept the distance from you. And so it seems like you turned to comic books, video games, and that type of thing to find an escape from that.
Well, one thing, first of all, I want to say this. I wish that my life was half as cool as you described it, because I would have loved to have been like a 12, 13-year-old me running around in kimonos and Darth Vader masks. That would have been awesome. I would have loved that, no doubt. But the reality for me was that, I lived in a town, for example, when integration occurred in the 70s. They had an emergency school board meeting that night. And as far as I know to this day, they still don't have a mixed prom. Because as soon as integration occurred, they made a decision that we're not going to have a prom where those type of people are going to be mixed with our kids. We had one school for the blacks on one side of the town. It was called Bruce School, and it went pretty much from K all the way up to high school levels. And it was doing really well. It was thriving really well and everything. But then as soon as integration occurred, a bunch of people came in and was like, well, we're going to take that school out because of what Bonita represents if you're having a mix with these kids. And so somebody went and bought the property. It was just like, I know. You don't get to determine what happens to this. I understand what the city says. I understand what the rules are. I understand what's going on, with the kids. But you're not going to close this down because this means too much to this community. And it's still a community center. They still have a basketball goal. They have some a basketball floor area, and they actually still have like an educational center. They have kind of the history of my hometown. They go in and they have seminars and different things like that, trying to teach kids about college and different things like that. They're trying to go out there and make a difference. For me, for example, growing up, my mother was very much just like, there's a way to speak in a world to survive. And there's a way a lot of these kids around you speak. You can't be that if you're wanting to be successful. And it's nothing against them. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, I want you to understand how to say things in a way that no matter where you are, you can communicate with the rest of the world around you.
Right.
And so every time we'd go to doctor's appointments, every time we'd go to dentist office, wherever, my mother would shove a word power in my hand, or not a word power, but Reader's Digest with the word power section. And she would basically say, okay, you're going to read this, and you're going to find a word, and you're going to learn that word while we're sitting here for 45 minutes. And you're going to be able to spell it and use it in a sentence. before we leave. And so that's kind of the stuff my mother did. And so my mother is still very much, you know, make sure you're pronouncing things clearly. You know, I work on phones. And so it's really funny in my 9-to-5 how beneficial that learning was, because it helps me to be able to navigate a lot of phone calls and things like that as people are out there. But then it also helps in my writing, because it gives me this larger vocabulary to work with when I'm dealing, you know, even dealing with some kids' books and eventually writing other things in the future. Right. You know, I want to be able to say, you know, I think the art of writing sometimes has to do with being able to say the same thing 14 different ways.
Yeah, there is a level of that. Yeah, there is something to be said about being able to come up with 10 different words for snow when you've got to describe a snowstorm that somebody's in, and you just keep going, snow, 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 snow. So, yeah.
It was a cold winter's day in Auburn. You know, the snow reeked about our heads as it billowed across the skies, and it billowed over the cars, and it whitened the whole entire area with this mist.
Yeah, right. Now, what were the? Now, you mentioned earlier that you were like a really responded to video games, comic books, and stuff. What was some of the stuff that you enjoyed growing up? Like, if someone were to say to you, "Hey, Will, I've got the new book of this, or I've got the new comic of that," what would be the thing that would just make you go, "Oh, that is so cool, I am there"? Like what is it that when you hear someone announce something saying like, "Oh, the brand new, is it Batman or the new Pokemon," or what was it that you loved when you were growing up?
I'm gonna say, first off, Superman actually was what I learned to read off of.
Interesting.
Because my aunt would always bring me Superman comic books. So when I grew up, you know, I was just like, these pictures are really cool, but what are these things that Sesame Street keeps telling me about? Well, they're letters. Well, what happens when you put them together? Oh, they form words. Okay, so now I've got to watch every show on the planet to figure out how to say these words. Mm. And so that was the first really reading experience I had, was growing up trying to read Superman comic books.
Oh, wow.
And so growing up, I always appreciated the truth, justice, and American way, what he represented. You know, as I got older, I was like, wow, he really is kind of overpowered. But the character represented that idea of being a hero from a different world, coming in and being a hero to the people he was around, you know, especially being raised on Earth, you know, the Ma and Pa Kent thing, you know, and being raised in a small town and learning how to have all this power, but to be a good person in spite of the power that he had. I always was impressed by that story.
Right. Where did Pencil Ninja come from?
So Pencil Ninja for me came out of a question I had. I was in college, I was reading Naruto one day, and of course, you know, they have like Killer Bee and a few African-American characters, but for the most part, manga, you don't have a whole lot of African-American characters for obvious reasons. And so I thought one day, I was like, you know, it would be interesting if I could come up with something that was a little kid who was a ninja. Well, I don't want him to be a normal kid, though. He needs to have something else. And I loved Mega Man. Loved playing the Mega Man games, although I don't think I've ever beaten any of them. I do love playing them. And so I was like, wait a minute, what if he's a robot kid? And then so slowly but surely I started building this story about this guy who is like a young man in his 20s or 30s. He does vacation Bible school lessons in a park, and he draws Pencil Ninja as kind of his main character. And so he uses Pencil Ninja to tell these Bible stories. Well, one day in the park, the kids have left. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Pencil Ninja, the creator of Pencil Ninja basically gets shot in the drive-by shooting at the park.
Oh.
Well, turns out that his father, kind of as his way of grieving his son's death, he sees all these sketches of Pencil Ninja. And he's just like, I can't bring my son back, but I can bring his creation to life.
Oh, interesting.
And so he builds the robot that becomes Pencil Ninja. And so, and originally the idea was to build a robot that could think like a child, move like a child, breathe like a child, so to speak. And then he would basically have these little small pencils that he could throw out like ninja stars. So let's say he's fighting a bigger opponent, he can draw like a step stool and run up the step stool and then kick the bigger person. And then of course he then, proceeds to that would disappear. So think like a Green Lantern, but very limited in the time scope. Like he doesn't have a boxing glove he can just punch infinitely with.
Right.
And so it's kind of that idea. Of course, I've got some other stories in line where eventually he has to learn to become the ninja portion of his name because there's some stuff that's going to happen later on. I'm going to be working on that probably this year, Lord willing. 2021, I just want to start doing the Pencil Ninja stories that I wanted to tell beyond what I've already told.
Right.
And just really kind of give him a bit of a, not really a grow up moment, but more of a, I want to take the story places that people have been, ever since he initially has been out there. Of course, it's been a few years, and so I want to kind of grow him up a little bit more toward that, toward an age he'd be a few years later, with maybe a few upgrades to his programming that will allow him to be more ninja mode as opposed to the child that he is currently.
Right. Well, keeping him a child, wouldn't that appeal to more children then, for lack of a
I
better
think
phrase?
so. And there are some, the plan is at some point to have one story going on where he has to kind of grow up and go through the new programming, but you have the other story. Think Ben 10, but if
Okay.
you were telling the two stories kind of side by side, if you had the Pencil Ninja Adventures where he's still the kid version of himself doing kid-like things, and then you have the older version, and I mean preteen older, I'm not meaning like
Right.
grown-up robot. To where you kind of get a pencil ninja that is a little bit older and a little bit smarter and not quite as big. Pencil ninja, I always feel like it's kind of that kid that's hopped up on sugar almost every day in a week.
Right.
And so I feel like with this version, it's a little bit more tame, but he's working more on like the martial arts aspect of his character. He's working more on stealth. He's working more on trying to use his shadow clones well and different things like that. Because as a child, he just kind of throws them out, whatever, willy-nilly, because there's no real thought to it. In a lot of those stories, there's not a whole lot of consequence. Because I'm not putting him in a situation to where he can't get out of it because he's the hero of the story.
Right,
He's
right.
gonna, he's gonna survive the thing. In the older stories, what I kind of go is to put him in a place where he has to change in order to beat the bad guys, because the bad guys have evolved and gotten bigger.
Right, right,
So
right,
that's kind of the idea going forward.
right, right. So with characters like this, and you're putting obviously a lot of your own personal experiences and a lot of your own personal feelings in there. How long does it take you to work on a script? Like, do you find yourself going, "Oh, I've got to spend the next X amount of time working on this," or do you do the script first, or do you how do you put the story together?
I wish I could say I did the script first because that would probably make things a whole heck of a lot easier. I tend to draw the pictures out first
Okay.
and then write based off the pictures that I draw.
Oh, okay, that's the old Marvel style of doing things.
And so I tend to kind of draw everything first, and then that's the way it works for me. So, for example, like what I did, obviously, Santa's a Spy, which when I was young, the question always was, what does Santa Claus do the other 300 something days of the year? And of course, my mother would say to me, "You're crazy. Why are we even talking about this?" Santa Claus isn't real. I'm like, I know he isn't real, but if he were,
Somebody has not thought this legend thing through. I mean, yeah, he comes
right,
out like super busy from December 20, from the end of Thanksgiving until pretty much the end of end of December, but you gotta ask, what's
What does he do the rest of the year?
Yeah,
And
exactly.
so, for the longest time, I had a little notebook that I would write down ideas. And one of the ideas that hit one day was, what if you were a spy? Because you think
That
about it, it's like, okay, so you've got this guy who can break into any house and not be detected. You've got this person that can get on a sleigh and fly literally cross-continental in less than 24 hours, whereas he's delivering presents on the same day, even when that day is not the same day in some countries.
Right.
You
Right now,
know.
the only thing going through my head is the name is Claus. Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Well, I call him in the stories, I call him Agent. I either call him Agent Nick or Agent Saint Nick. I never refer to him as Agent Claus, even though we all know who it is.
Right.
You know, but it's always Agent Nick usually, especially when Pencil Ninja works with him. It's always Agent Nick just as a sign of respect
Right. Well, it seems
for
like
it.
it's one of these things where you're just having fun telling, like, not fantasy stories in the way where you would think, like your Tolkien Hobbit type stuff, but you're telling fantasy stuff. You're telling fantasy stories in like almost a fairy tale-esque kind of way, like the old style Brothers Grimm type of way, but you're doing it with much the same way that the Brothers Grimm used what was the trappings of their day, you're using the trappings of your day to share your stories and everything. It seems like you're just having straightforward fun with this.
Well, I feel like if I'm not having fun doing it, I'm not, why would I do it? You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's just something in general in life. There's something to say about, I mean, everything's not fun. You know, work's not always fun, but you find fun in it.
Right.
You know, that helps it go along, because otherwise you're just losing your life, so to speak, to this thing, and you're just like, I'm making money at this thing that I don't enjoy, you
Right,
know.
right. How long now, when you make an issue, how long does it take you from like start to finish?
I would say on average, if I'm honest, I would say the way I should do it is I should give myself about 6 months and do one project and then do the other. It doesn't always work that way. I write on about four to five different projects at any given time.
That's just
And so
typical for
there
any
may
writer.
be a situation where, say, I may release three books in the course of 2 months. And it's because, like, case in point with the if you look at the schedule here, I'm gonna go back. So I did Hero Needed in July. I did the Time to Play the Game in August. Now the thing about that was good was I had been writing for my local paper, so I'd written game articles and different things like that. So I already had those stockpiled,
Right.
so I didn't have to write new material for it, but I did have to compose it, put it together, re-edit it, go in and do the artwork for the cover and everything else, and then make sure the format was proper for that. So it's a little bit different. But then you go to, say, Captain Fluffy Pants tries to take over the world. You're looking at February
Right.
of 2017, and that was just kind of my, I had worked on that since over the holidays and had it out by then, where I was like, you know, can I tell a story about thankfulness? You know, because Captain Fluffy Pants is kind of this story about this alien who has a whole bunch of everything and all this cool stuff, but yet he's not thankful for any of it. He wants to take over the Earth because of ice cream. He's never had ice cream, but he wants to take over the Earth for ice cream. So
Right.
he shows up to Earth, and it's like Pencil Ninja has to fight this big robot. Meanwhile, the kids in school are going, you know, you don't have to fight us for, you know, ice cream. If you just ask us for ice cream, we'll give you ice cream.
Right.
And so it's kind of that idea of, you know, sometimes it's not only just thankfulness, but it's the power of being nice to people.
Right.
You know, because you wouldn't believe how beneficial that can be. And so, you know, that message. A lot of my stories, like I said, I'll be writing on stuff, and of course, then the report on John about John Henry was in March. So there again, I'm writing several things at any given time, and then I slowly just put them all out there.
Right. That's pretty much how it ends up doing is that you end up going like through long periods of not putting anything out because you're working on several things, and then you finally get to the point where you're like, I'm tired of working on the same silly things for the last couple of months, and then you sit down and you buckle down and you get like three projects done in about 2, 3 weeks, and then you release them very simple. It's just because like with the day-to-day life, so it's pretty
Right.
interesting. So, Will, if people are interested in seeing your work, where can they go?
Well, there's a couple of places. First things first, of course, the author page, which is amazon.com/author/William Holland, and it's all typed together. So that's the first place. I do post up stuff on my Instagram, which is under Will Holland 9973. And then I also have a writers group on my Facebook page, and anybody that's interested in that, they can find me at William K. Holland on Facebook, and then message me, and then I will add them to the writers group at that point so they can see what's going on. Right now, it's been kind of a wild period where I haven't really updated a whole lot. I think the last thing I updated was when I did the comic book, the Pencil Ninja Adventures comic. And so I put that out back in, July of last year.
Okay.
So no, August. So it was August. So when it printed. So.
Right. Well, Will, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show tonight. I'm really happy to hear all the projects you're doing. And I think a lot of the stuff that you are working on is incredibly inspiring. And I think it's not just going to entertain people, but I think it's going to make them... I think it's going to make them feel better about themselves. And one of the bigger things that people are going to see is that there is a hope, and it's okay to believe that things are going to work out, and it's okay to believe in something bigger than them.
Yeah, definitely. I always tell people that my books are targeted at kids and kids at heart. So if you're a person that enjoys things like anime, manga, comic books, but also something that will make you laugh a little bit. It may make you cry for a moment, but it may also, more importantly, give you hope that tomorrow can be better.
Right.
It's not perfect, but it can be better.
Right, right.
So that's the hope in anything I write.
Gotcha. Well, we've got a couple of minutes. What do you say we make a total left-hand turn in our conversation?
My podcast, conversations about ... I do that all the time, so I'm used to it.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Talking about doing the unusual tales of Santa Claus and what is he doing the rest of the year, haven't quite been able to let go of Christmas yet. And
okay, fair enough.
Over the break, I had a chance to see an updated version of A Christmas Carol with Guy Pearce as Scrooge. Now, did you get a chance to see that?
I've gotten to see most of it. I believe I got to the point where Scrooge had kind of, and this is it okay to get the spoilers on this or no?
Hold on. We're going to say this. If you have not seen A Christmas Carol yet with Guy Pearce as Scrooge, we are going to be talking spoilers, and we're going to be giving just some honest chats about this, because I actually wanted to talk about this a little bit. And we're going to do this, consider it a spoiler, in 3, 2, 1. Okay, go for it, Will.
Okay, so there's a point where he has been doing this experiment with people, trying to determine the depravity of which people would sink for certain things, for money primarily. And there's a point where the wife comes to him and says, you know, my kid has these bills, these things are going on. I need help with some money. I need a bit of a loan. If you could take out X amount of dollars out of my husband's pay to cover this, then I can pay you back and do it that way. And so he's like, okay, well, you're going to come to my home and you're going on Christmas Day, which he knows that this is the thing. He's so creepy because he knows that's a day that's special to them.
Yeah.
Okay, so he says, I want you to come on my house on Christmas Day, and you're going to do whatever I say. And if you do whatever I say, I'm going to give you this, not as a loan, but as a gift. But you have to do everything I say. Now, one thing about this version of Scrooge is that he sets up this very interesting philosophy early on in the movie, or in the season, where he says, I wish that people would stop pretending to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
We have this thing where, you know, every other day of the year we're monsters to one another, but one day a year we pretend we're not monsters. Why don't we do it the opposite way, where we're like decent human beings the rest of the year, and for one day we get to be monsters? And
that's kind of something.
Yeah, that is the purge. I said that to somebody. I kid you not. When you listen to conversations about ... there's a point where I say that to my co-host. I actually say that feels like a purge to me.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the future, where you get the alternative version of Christmas Carol, where Scrooge is leading purge in his era.
Yeah, exactly.
But so the thing is, he gets this man's wife. She comes over to the house, and she's convinced that they're going to have intercourse.
Yeah. Yeah, because he makes her say it, too. That was the other thing. He's like, okay, tell me what we're going to do. She's like, you really aren't going to make me say it. I'm willing to do intercourse with you so that we can do this, and I'm like, so that I can get money. And he's just like, yes. But he wasn't sitting there like, you didn't see that, like, yeah, like that Al Bundy, my wife is cleaning the picnic table look. He was
Right.
just sitting there, just looking at her like he was being incredibly mathematical about it. That was
He
the
was
other.
being very scientific-y. He was being
Yeah.
he was literally conducting an experiment. He had no personal stakes in it. He literally just wanted to see what she was willing to do for
Yeah.
this money.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to go, and that's as far as you got.
That's far as I got. Now that
Okay.
said, I do love the more horror-esque elements of this. And
Yes.
the fact that you actually get a better storyline as to why Scrooge is like this. Like when he sees that vision of his dad,
Yes. And then
I
where he's
about
got
lost it.
that pet mouse.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, 'cause basically and the other thing is, 'cause I gotta tell you, it really sets it up for excuse me, the Ghost of Christmas Present and the Ghost of Christmas Future. Now, I won't spoil it for you, but
Fair
when you
enough.
finish watching them, send me a message so that we can talk about it. I will have you back on so that we can talk about it again,
You
because
got it.
it was really, really interesting. Because what I found interesting about this was, this was a Christmas Carol that was done post Ripper Street, post I think that show's called Peaky Blinders. It's like with Jack the Ripper, like with all the stuff going on with Jack the Ripper and the updated versions of from the From Hell Patricia Cornwell's Portrait of a Killer, and our friend of the conversations, Randy Williams, who wrote in who I think he solved the Jack the Ripper murders with some modern updating programming and some other detective techniques, and it is really, really kind of interesting. And people aren't seeing the Charles Dickens version of London, like the stories of Oliver Twist. Oliver Twist has just not been that forward in the zeitgeist as it had been in years and years ago, in the last 30, 40 years. And people have gotten smarter. And then with the advent of the internet, and people are understanding this is what London was like. I mean, with Sherlock Holmes, people were understanding that London was not this place where Mary Poppins hung out. London was a nasty, nasty place. And that's what this version of A Christmas Carol is. It's like, let's take that and then add to the fact that people learn so much more about addiction, about like what creates monsters and abusers and narcissists and stuff. People, there's more of an understanding of that than there was years ago. So basically, somebody has applied all of that, and he's done that with Scrooge. But what's interesting is, you can almost compare A Christmas Carol to the modern version of The Haunting of Hill House. That's on Netflix. It has Henry Thomas Elliot from ET as the father on there. And what you're seeing is like these grown-up children. Like in the original version, it was done by Shirley Jackson. She wrote the book The Haunting of Hill, or it was just called The Haunting. And I was not a fan of it. I was not a fan of it. I just thought the whole thing was just whiny. It was just whiny and nasally and just really annoying. And I'm actually one of those horrible people that liked the Liam Neeson version better than the original one. That was like, ooh, was it scary? Was there like you didn't know if it was supposed to be a haunted house or was it this all in this crazy lady's head? And so what you had with all of this was, someone, in fact, it was the guy that directed Dr. Sleep. He did a version of The Haunting of Hill House where he basically took some of the concepts from it and then And then just made it about, like, instead of it being like all of these people that may or may not have psychic issues stuck together in a haunted house, he made it about a family that's trying to renovate a haunted house. And they all come together with the apparent suicide of their younger sister. And so, like, that's kind of what they did with this, because they spent a lot of time, like, when you read, I just reread the Christmas Carol this past season, and when you reread it, the Ghost of Christmas Present was some almost hermaphroditic, asexual child being thing that looked like it was either, like, on one angle, like, it was looked like it was either an 11-year-old boy or it looked like it was an elderly woman. And that was the way Dickens described it. And the thing was, is that Andy Serkis does not look like any of those. And when he played the Ghost of Christmas Past, he was playing it as one person that morphs in all of these different people. You know what I mean? Like, he morphs in, like, he was Alibaba at one point, and then he was, he brought Scrooge's cruel father to him, and then you find out the stuff that was going on at the school that where that was an interesting twist to it, where you find out that Scrooge was apparently the plaything of the headmaster.
Right.
And so when the sister goes to get him and everything, and then you've got that one hidden part where the sister pulls the gun on the headmaster and says, "You ever come near my son again, I'm shooting you." Like that, or my brother again, we're shooting you. There was a lot of that, that it was just kind of like, it would explain, like, because what I thought was interesting about this was nobody was a cartoon character. Because when you go back and watch the original versions of Scrooge and A Christmas Carol, you've got people that are like, oh, bah, humbug. Like, he almost, he's, you kind of imagine this sort of guy, he's built like Mr. Burns in The Simpsons, when you see Mr. Burns walking around with no clothes, like, walking around in, like, no clothes on, when Smithers is all flutter about it. But, and you saw that guy. Now, Scrooge is kind of young, good-looking, and Guy Pearce's style reminds me of a very young Frank Langella. If you ever saw Frank Langella's version of Dracula,
and I remember that, yes.
Yeah, where his version is not, I am going to suck your blood, blah. His is very much like, hello, I am Count Dracula. Like, he does subtlety, and that's the way Pierce plays this. He plays it very subtle. He's a very broken man who numbers make sense to him, and he's very, very subtle. And
numbers make sense to him, and people don't make sense to him, because he's seen this horrible world around him, and he's been so scarred by it that he cannot see any light beyond people, even good people that are around him.
Exactly, exactly. And then the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting was how they actually give a bit of backstory as to what exactly he did, what him and Marley did, the, for lack of a better term, the sins that they did, where because of their penny-pinching ways, there was a mine collapse. They bought a factory for $800, sold it for $2,000, and fired everybody in there. I thought that type of stuff was interesting, how they did. They showed why these guys were having the problems that they did and why they were as well hated as they were. And even one of the things that I thought was interesting was seeing Bob Cratchit wasn't like, Bob Cratchit wasn't just your straightforward, like, oh, Mr. Scrooge, poor Mr. Scrooge, I'm going to believe in tomorrow and take a Pollyannish view on life. He viewed, he would like mumble stuff under his breath at Scrooge, and which is what anybody would do if they had a boss like that. And and I thought that was interesting, that there was a lot of that in there.
Well, I think another thing that's interesting, too, is, you know, you talked about Marley and you talked about Scrooge and their manipulations and things. One of the things that was interesting is when they explained the chains to Marley. He said each one of these links is for a person who died under your mismanagement. You know, you're having to hold on to this. And there's a very biblical idea, because in Judaism, even when a person was convicted of murder, one of the penalties that they would do, they wouldn't put you in jail in some cases. In some cases, you committed murder, you would have to carry the rotting corpse with you.
Oh, jeez.
So that everyone saw what you did. And here's the thing about rotting corpses. The longer you're around rotting corpses, your body will physically begin to deteriorate, just like a rotting corpse will. Because it's not just like, oh, he's dragging it 17 feet away. It's linked to him, like, as close as he could be linked.
Yeah, and then when you add all the other stuff that happens with that, the putrefaction, the animals, mm-hmm. like, you're shooing away yeah. buzzards. So.
Right, right, literally as you're walking. And so, yeah, it's part of that whole fate, because you're tied to that person's death.
Yeah.
And so imagine having all these people whose lives are on you.
Yeah, yeah.
As a result of it, those chains being linked, and that idea of the even you see a moment where Scrooge sees the guy who is in the purgatory place. You know, they're just kind of there, and there's that brief second where he sees that guy, and then he's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, these people from purgatory are coming hoping that you will either repent, or they will outfit you with the same set of chains.
Right. You know what I thought was interesting was how they did the ghosts. There was nothing to them. And I liked that. I liked that, because, like, in past versions of A Christmas Carol, when you see the ghosts, you see them, they're ethereal, they're white, they're glowing, you can see through them, they're, ooh! When he was in the room with him, when Marley was in the room with Scrooge, it was the two of them were in the room together. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I like that, because it didn't take so much out of the Scrooge, three ghosts are coming. Marley,
right.
Marley was just kind of like, this Marley was not the doomed soul that you see in all the other stories. This Marley was like, I have no idea what's happening, but Scrooge, you've got to do something, please. You've got to help me out with this. He more or less, what he reminded me of was, you've got somebody, that a friend of yours, that says, well, look, I need $50 by weekend. Can you help out for to pay
right.
a bill? That type of thing. I thought that's kind of what I got from it, and I thought that was really interesting. So, again, it's I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. And I really, really hope you get a chance to. Like, I have two things that I wish that they changed. I think they made the Ghost of Christmas Past, that segment, longer than they did with Present and Christmas Yet to Come. And when you see Christmas Yet to Come, holy cow. He's played by probably one of the most underrated actors in England or in the United States, and that's Jason Fleming. Jason Fleming also played Dr. Jekyll in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And
okay.
A lot of these movies I know have flaws, but his part was absolutely excellent. He looked, I'm telling you, Jason Fleming, for all I can say, is he could have played the Doctor. Heck, Guy Pearce could have played the Doctor. Heck, at this point, anybody could play the Doctor, as opposed to the atrociousness that they currently got playing the Doctor on Doctor Who.
Oh, so you're not a fan of the current Doctor, then?
The most dangerous thing you could ever say to me is, hey, Don, tell me, what is your opinion of the current, of the 13th Doctor? Hold on. It's going to get really disgusting. So it's no, they've completely butchered what was once a good show. And yeah, I'm not going to say anything more on that, but
fair enough.
Yeah. But what I saw was, it was really, really interesting and well done. And what I think they were trying to do is, I didn't look at what they were doing so much as a, hi, we're the definitive Scrooge. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I looked at this as, this is our version of A Christmas Carol. Much the same way, like, this is our James Bond movie. This is our Batman movie. I mean, right. now, they're now filming the Robert Pattinson Batman movie, I saw. Mm-hmm. Like, set reports have just popped up. So, So, like, you've got your Adam West, for those that like the Adam West, for those that like Kevin Conroy, for those that like Michael Keaton, for those that liked Val Kilmer, for those that liked Ben Affleck, for those that liked Christian Bale. You know what I mean? None of them have said the previous ones stink. Ignore them. We're the best one.
Right.
And that's what I kind of got the feeling of A Christmas Carol from with this, was they basically said, look, you can have those versions. In fact, we want you to have those versions. We're just coming at it at a different way. And you know what? There's going to be other versions of A Christmas Carol in the future. So probably Robert Pattinson at some point will play Scrooge.
Well, and here's my thing, because they mentioned it as season one. Now, did they finish the story in this?
Yes.
I know I hadn't got the... Okay, so they did finish the story. I wonder why they referred to it as season one.
It's a three-hour thing. I don't know why they called it season one. They do kind of give some... I'm not going to go too much for... ruin it for you, but at the very last shot, they kind of, there is a little bit of a hint that something more could happen. So
okay,
but anyway,
so to kind of think of what's his name, the radio guy who used to say, and now for the rest of the story.
Oh yeah, Paul Harvey.
Paul Harvey, you get the Paul Harvey moment.
The rest of the story. So anyway. Will, I can't even begin to thank you again for tonight. It has been such a pleasure, and thank you for your patience with everything tonight. We had a little bit of a slow start with some Skype problems, and you have just been very kind, and I really appreciate it, and I am really excited about your books, and I hope people go and check out Pencil Ninja on Amazon. We will have links for your page on Amazon and your Facebook page, and also at the same time, listen to Will's podcast, conversations.... What do you talk about?
We, for the first little bit, we've primarily been doing geek stuff. Now I do want to be able to get into some other stuff. I've got some people I'm working on trying to get on the show where we're going to be talking about things like faith. We're going to be talking about, some popular, unpopular things. And, you know, I mean, goodness, man, we might even do, I mean, if you're willing to come on, we might do a Doctor Who episode where we're talking about Doctor Who and people's feelings on Doctor Who, because I know I've got a couple of friends who introduced me to the world of Doctor Who, and so the whole British thing in and of itself is very unique to me.
Yeah.
Because I've never watched a whole lot of British television. That said, I enjoyed it for what it is. You know, I appreciate what it is. But, I mean, there's just, we want to talk about a lot of things, you know, as it relates to different things. I want to talk about it because this conversation is about. At the end of the day, I want to be able to have conversations with people. And like I said on one of the episodes, I may not agree with everything the person that's with me says, but I'm going to respect them enough, and I hope they would respect me enough to listen to what I would have to say as well.
Right.
Because that's what a conversation really ultimately is. It's about hearing people say things and then being able to listen and hear them and then kind of see what happens from there.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of what we try to do with Conversations of the Strange as well. So, Will, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It has just been an absolute pleasure.
Not a problem, Mr. Smith. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. Hey, when you get that person on to talk about faith, I'd actually be interested in that one.
I'll tell you what, we will definitely have that conversation.
Yeah,
and we'll definitely connect you on there for you, okay?
Cool. Thank you very much. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. And considering this is our first podcast of the new year, I hope you have a great year, and this is a good one. And I do believe that 2020 is going to be the best year yet. Night. All right, hold on one second. Let me make sure that...